This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me are Brian Fernandez and Joyce Goh with the top business stories of the day. We begin with a look at our stock market. It's been going guns, going on the uptrend, as they say. Sounds like a good start for the year. But what are analysts saying about the prospects for not just the economy, but the equity markets in 2018. Joyce.
Sure. So Nomura Global Markets Research recommends a stock selective approach for Malaysian equities this year. Its KLCI target is 1,860 points as of end 2018. So it closed at 1,826.95 points yesterday. And the benchmark growth could exceed 1,860 points if corporate earnings growth exceeds 5%.
Yeah, so GDP, according to Nomura, is projected to grow at 5.5% this year, a slight moderation against the forecast of 5.8% last year. Now, they are overweight on a couple of different sectors: aviation, gaming, hotels and leisure, consumer, chemicals, telecommunications, and oil and gas and financials as well. So quite a number of sectors. It seems to be quite a broad base in terms of growth in Malaysia
this year. There's something really special about 2018. We just had that segment there with Nick Nazmi and Cheryl Hamdan talking about the general elections. Now, is the general election going to have any impact on the stock market?
Well, Nomura says there has been no big bang stimulus announcements as the government remains committed to fiscal consolidation. But based on historical analysis, it expects outperformance in sectors such as the consumer discretionary and utility sectors around the election period.
Yeah, also they project that foreign fund inflow will increase in the first half of 2018, given the projected appreciation of the ringgit. Now, profit-taking, however, will very likely, as per in the past, occur more prominently post GE14. Now, one of the things that it's going to impact definitely is the oil price scenario. Now, the rise in oil prices will have positive ramifications on the federal government's fiscal target of 2.8% this year. Now, their report cited the current price at 68 ringgit for Brent crude oil, which is really significantly above the $52 mark used by the government to table its 2018 budget.
Yeah, so Nomura expects the government to front-load spending in the first half of the year ahead of elections and then reduce spending post-elections. And they think that the fiscal deficit of 2.8% is expected to remain intact.
Yeah, but you see, if you look at, let's go back a little bit further. And if in 2009, the deficit was 6.1%. Last year, it was 3%. Obviously, the target is 2.8% this year. But if you... those look great in terms of progress, but if you actually look at the numbers, the needle has not moved very much. So in 2017, the number was 39.89 billion ringgit. 2018, it's projected to be 39.79, so pretty much the same number. So the government is, the absolute number still remains very, very high.
Yeah, remember last week the government said on Wednesday that it would unlikely be able to meet a zero budget deficit target by 2020 and would instead need three years or more to do so.
Yeah, I think what some of the critics or observers at least are saying, what do we know about these 3 years? What's going to happen in the interim? What kind of targets and such, right?
Yeah, and a number of economists were not surprised by this. They also do not think that the country will pare down its debt substantially, if at all, in the coming 5 years. So this was according to the story in the Age Weekly. And the Malaysian government's debt has grown an average of 10% a year over the past 10 years to reach more than 680 billion ringgit as at end September 2017, from around 260 billion ringgit in 2007.
Yeah, so the big part of this debt spiral is really because operating expenditure grew at an average of 6% per year over the last 10 years, which is a lot faster than its revenue growth, which is only about 4.9% per year over the last decade.
And that operating expenditure would include pensions, I guess, as well as just salaries at this point in time.
Yes.
This story came in the Age Weekly, so they're looking at also like contingent liabilities and debt.
So let's look at the corporate side of the story. What about earnings in 2018?
Well, Nomura Global Markets Research, 2018 is expected to be good. But for they were talking about 2017. They say that the weak company earnings have continued to dampen foreign interest in Malaysian equities, making them more expensive on a price earnings basis compared to their regional peers.
Yeah. So apparently, if you look at those valuations, on a PE to growth basis, Malaysia looks like the most expensive market in ASEAN. And according to the head of Malaysia's equity research, Nomura's Malaysia Equity Research, margins remain a drag on corporate earnings due to the high cost of doing business.
You know, earlier when you, Joyce, when you spoke to Dodge, I mean, you know, they often, analysts overseas are often very bullish about emerging markets. And because Malaysia, you know, I guess has to compare itself to other markets.
The regional peers, yes. Mm. Yes, they will, of course, compare us with our neighbours. And to them, it's emerging markets. Which one should they put their money in?
Okay. Now, let's look at the story coming in. The Securities Commission has ordered a Singapore-based blockchain startup, CopyCash Foundation, to halt all its activities in Malaysia, including a planned initial coin offering, or ICO, scheduled for today.
Yeah, the SEC said the decision came after it found there is reasonable likelihood that disclosures in CopyCash's white paper, as well as its representations to potential investors, will contravene relevant requirements under securities law.
Yeah, so apparently in its white paper, CopyCash Foundation said that a social travesting platform. So travesting, that's a new term for me. Mm. It's a combination of trading and investing.
And nothing to do with the word travesty.
Travesty, right? Yeah. So essentially, it's an investing platform purportedly built on blockchain technology that allows investors to view, and this is interesting, trading actions of other investors, and then with an option to automatically copy those actions. So they plan to, in fact, issue 50 million of their own cryptocurrencies, CopyCash coin.
Yeah, so maybe hence the name CopyCash.
Which,
way, right?
I would not invest in any company that had the word copy, except maybe Xerox. Okay, now, didn't we have a statement coming up from government just last week? A second finance minister, Dato' Sri Johari Abdul Ghani, and said that the central bank will not impose a blanket ban on cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin.
Yeah, but the monetary authority, he said that they're taking a cautious approach with digital currencies, including Bitcoin, to ensure safety measures are in place to protect interests of public interest.
Yeah, so he told the Malaysian Reserve that such action would only curb innovation and creativity in the financial sector, particularly in financial technology. Although Bank Negara does not regulate digital currencies currently, it will ensure that digital currency exchanges comply with the requirements to conduct customer due diligence as well as to report suspicious transactions to authorities. So that whole thing about how the criminal syndicates are using cryptocurrencies to launder monies, I think weighs a lot in the minds of governments and central banks.
Yeah, the central bank initiated a policy compelling digital currency exchange operators to report their activities.
Yeah. You know, what's also interesting, we all in related cryptocurrency news, as it were, Kodak, and a brand that I think several generations of Malaysia associate with a great affection, the Kodak brand, has announced that it will launch its own cryptocurrency and plans to have an initial coin offering at the end of this month.
Yeah, and the cryptocurrency would underpin an encrypted digital ledger of rights ownership for photographers.
Yeah, so the idea is that photographers could use it to register works with the Kodak coin functioning as a medium of exchange on the platform. So there's some relation there. So it's carving up a digital currency niche within its own sphere of imaging.
All right. So Kodak, you know, for the times of your life, I think it was remember that tagline?
Yeah, I haven't heard that in a while.
Okay. Moving on to the Sultan of Johor and his investments in Sri Lanka.
Well, there's news that the Sultan of Johor, Sultan Ibrahim, has teamed up with entrepreneur Datuk Patrick Lim Sukit for a farmer project in Sri Lanka.
Now, just remind us, who is Datuk Patrick Lim? Because he's kind of a well-known name in the business circles, isn't he?
Yeah, so he used to be, I think, Tun Dr. Mahathir dubbed him as Patrick Badawi before. He was the founder of Equin Capital that changed its name to Global Oriental in late 2012.
Yeah.
And was very active in business in Penang in particular.
Yeah, and then he kind of fell off the radar and seems to be back. Yeah, so Sultan Ibrahim and Patrick Lim have teamed up to make an investment in the $100 million industrial zone for pharmaceutical manufacturers in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, so the State Manufacturing Pharmaceutical Manufacturing Corporation of Sri Lanka, SPMC, and PharmaZone have entered into an agreement to build the first ever exclusive pharmaceutical manufacturing zone in Sri Lanka.
Now, PharmaZone, just a quick round of what it is a Sri Lankan Board of Investment approved company whose principals are Sultan Ibrahim and Patrick Lim. But PharmaZone will manage the land, facilities and infrastructure for local pharmaceutical manufacturers. But the question is, why is Sri Lanka important?
Well, this is important to Sri Lanka for a couple of reasons. They want to save foreign exchange. So it's in line with the Sri Lankans' government's goal of localizing pharma production to the value of 100 million ringgit to save that foreign exchange dollars.
Sorry, I didn't mean is why is Sri Lanka important. I said, why is this important for Sri Lanka?
Yeah, it'll also help reduce their dependency on imported drugs, right? So in a way, it will help them. Drugs will be also more affordable to the people there.
Yeah, what's interesting because the Sri Lankan story continues to gallop, not just because of the China's investments there, but I think primarily it grabbed a lot of headlines last year, if you remember China's investments in ports and other infrastructure development there. Now, moving on, opposition lawmaker Tony Pua has demanded to know how the embattled investment fund, 1MDB, was able to make its final $600 million or 2.4 billion ringgit settlement payment to Abu Dhabi's International Petroleum Investment Corporation, or IPIC, last December. Because this is a question that is floating around. There's a lot of chatter around it. Joyce, what do we know about Tony Pua's questions?
Well, basically, he's asking how 1MDB made this payment, considering that, as he puts it, we all know 1MDB is completely insolvent. So 1MDB has stated that it funded the payment through its ongoing rationalization program. So Pua is basically saying no one knows what this program is about. Basically asking for details on it.
Yeah, so he also raised the issue with citing a recent report on the Singapore Straits Times, querying the report as it merely identified anonymous buyers that's concerns ultimately controlled by Chinese state-held enterprises. So his question is who would pay 2.4 billion ringgit for those parcels of land when the combined purchase cost to 1MDB amounted to less than 1.4 billion?
Okay. So, well, Tony Pua's job as a member of parliament is to ask questions of the government of the day and its related entities. But in a sense, has this payment really settled matters between 1MDB and IPIC? I mean, have we ended the story? Have we achieved closure?
Well, basically, the second payment was paid ahead of schedule, so that's a positive. In a way, they've settled that. But there's also this other issue where there's this dispute between 1MDB and IPIC about a missing $3.5 billion in cash, which 1MDB claim it has deposited into IPIC's subsidiary ABA BVI. So IPIC claimed that it never received the monies from 1MDB, triggering the dispute. According to the Straits Times, they're going to negotiate this month about this outstanding $3.5 billion that remains in dispute.
Okay, 1MDB, the story that keeps giving. We're coming up to the top of the hour, then we'll be back with the Breakfast Grill. Remember our guest today, Sharon Valiram, Executive Director of the Valiram Group, speaking to Brian Fernandez. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.